Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops. Today on Open Loops, we have a veteran of the fringe broadcasting circuit, as I call it here, the alternative press, the alternative news, the all kinds of paranormal, supernatural. I mean, this is a guy who is he's been on all different radio programs, podcasts, and is a researcher and author of several interesting books. I mean, the Mandela Effect, Hollow Moon, UFOs, are they coming from the moon? He even has some stuff coming up on, he has a book coming out on shadow people. I mean, really interesting stuff, time travel, topics that we love on this show. So I've seen him around and I've thought, okay, you know what? I want to really dig into the intel that this guy has, the perspectives. So I'm excited to have him on. Rob Shelsky, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely, my friend. I mean, you know, it's always curious. And I know the moon is kind of where you have several books on the moon, but you got it all. I mean, you've got Ancient Alien Empire, all this stuff. I mean, look, I have to go to the source here. Let me start at the beginning, which is, how in the world do you get into this field? Did you have an experience yourself? Is it curiosity? I mean, what led you to dedicate time to these topics?
Oh, well, that was my mental therapist at the local asylum. He told me that I should get involved in this. I paused.
I thought, well, I gotta be respectful. That's hilarious. Now wait, I mean,
I was a little kid. I was about 7 years old, and I woke up one night. It was in Australia. I was a little kid, and my parents' bedroom was at the opposite end of the house. It was one of those houses where the corridor from the front door goes right to the back door. All the rooms go off that corridor. And I remember having a very vivid dream, I guess, about an alien at the back door. The back door had a glass window in it. And I woke up absolutely petrified, and I went to my parents' room to tell them, and they just dismissed it. Right. So I didn't think anything of it for years. But then my brother, when he was 16, reported missing time on a trip to the desert. He and a friend went. And he didn't remember it for years. He lived in San Diego, went to the desert. They saw an object in the sky that seemed to land nearby. They went to look for it. That's the last they remember. The next thing they remember is they were in the morning getting up, striking camp, waiting for his friend's father to come pick them up. That was it. They never talked about it, never brought it up, not for about 22 years. And then one day, my brother was watching a show on UFOs, and the memory came back to him. So he called up his friend John in San Diego and said, "Do you remember this incident?" And he goes, "Well, I do now." So they got really involved in it, and John eventually moved his entire family to Las Vegas to be near my brother. And they researched for years. But then my brother suddenly lost, oh, I don't want to say he lost interest. I think he got scared. I asked him one time, I said, "How's it going?" And he said, "It's fine. I just don't deal with the UFO thing anymore." And I said, "How come, Mike?" And he said, I just want to live a normal life." And I said, "Let me ask you this. If you're on your deathbed and you wanted to know the answer, are UFOs real or not? Do they exist or not? Where are they from? Would you want to know?" And he said, "It depends on the answer." And that was it. He wouldn't talk about it anymore. So, but that's what got me started on this whole thing. I began to slowly get more and more interested. And as I get interested in something, I research it. And when I research it a lot, then I figure, well, why not write a book about it, especially if there's no books available on the subject to any real degree. And that's how I got into this, step by step, year by year.
That's so interesting. And I mean, it's very curious, you know. I mean, oftentimes people talk about their experiences being the catalyst, but for you to do this work on behalf of your brother. By the way, has your brother ever read any of your works? Do you have that confirmed?
None of my family has ever read any of my works, or any of my friends, even on my street. No one knows I'm an author. They go, "Oh, you write books?" I go, "I've been here since 2002, and you still don't know I write books?" And I said, "I'm fairly successful at it."
Yeah, what the heck?
No, really. I mean, my life's under a bushel basket. I said, "I've even been on television. I was an on-camera expert for a Travel Channel show. They flew me out to Hollywood in 2019. I said, "How can you not know that I write books? I'm all over the internet. Just Google my name." But nope, nobody does.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, that is very interesting. I wonder if one day there'll be kind of a reconciliation of your work in the family with experiences. I don't know.
Well, I'm sure once I'm long dead, my books will become famous and my family will make a fortune off the royalty rights. But it won't be me.
Oh my gosh, I love the positive attitude. I love it. Yeah, so look, Rob, I you obviously you've delved on several different rabbit holes here, and I think for me, I mean, I'm as much as I love time travel, and I've talked to a lot of people that claim they've time traveled or been part of projects where time travel has been involved. My focus is on the moon thing for some reason. I am very intrigued by what is going on with this thing in the sky. Because, you know, it's interesting. I mean, sometimes moon people just go hollow moon, sometimes they go spaceship, sometimes they go into the, well, Earth is flat and we never landed on the moon. I mean, at a high level, let me ask you this. Sure, you had UFOs, you had these experiences, but how do you get to questioning the existence of this thing that's just there for all of us that we take for granted?
Well, it's just you know, it's funny. I was on Coast to Coast Radio and they asked me, "What do you think about the hollow moon theory?" And I absolutely dismissed it out of hand. I said, "No, it's not hollow. How could it be? It affects the tides. It's got mass. It's got density." But that started me on a long road of researching about it. I got kind of curious as to why people would think it was hollow. So I started researching it. And there is, I won't say there's a smoking gun, but there is a lot of factual evidence that supports the idea of a hollow moon, or at least a moon with large hollow cavities within it. And the evidence for that is, I will say, fairly compelling, really. I mean, the moon just doesn't make sense. It's just one scientist at NASA said, it's easy. Well, it actually was Isaac Asimov, and he wasn't at NASA, but he's a famous scientist and writer.
Of course.
And he said, it's easier to make a declaration that the moon doesn't exist than to explain how it exists.
Oh, that's compelling. Now that is very compelling. I mean, okay, so for people out there that maybe aren't familiar, and yeah, feel free to like really go like 101 here. I mean, let's assume that I'm coming from the place to of okay, this is the moon. We it's got some interesting properties. We visited it before, supposedly. How do you start breaking down the reality of that for people that are curious, but maybe haven't been pushed to believe yet?
Well, I do believe in the scientific method. I'm one of those people that when it comes to UFOs and such, I want to kick the tires. I want to know what's real. I want to touch it, feel it. And that's how I approach the whole moon thing. The first problem with the moon is it's too big for its density. The moon is too large for the amount of density it has. If it's made from the same material as Earth, if a planet impacted the Earth and ended up creating the moon with the Theia theory of impact, a Mars-like object hitting the Earth way back about 4.5 billion years ago, then you have to say the moon is made of the same stuff as Earth, or at least a mixture of Earth and the planet Theia. Well, it doesn't seem to be. We haven't found any isotopes that don't match the Earth's mantle. They do match it. But there's another problem. The Earth's mantle is denser than the moon. The moon is so light, it could almost float in water. It's just too large for its apparent density. So it's missing mass. Where is it missing the mass? Well, not on the surface. So where is the missing mass? Well, it must be inside a hollow. But also, the moon has other problems. When they landed on the moon, Apollo 11, and they did some digging in the rocks there, not very well, but they did it, the top three layers of rock are in reverse order. The densest is on the top, then the next lightest, then the next. They didn't get down very far, but those are the three layers they found. This is contrary to everything we know about a moon or any object that has gravity. If you put a bunch of different types of dirt in a glass of water, shake it up, and let it will settle in layers with the densest, the heaviest landing at the bottom, and then gradually getting lighter. On the moon, that was reversed. Also, the moon has moonquakes. It has Neptunium-237. It shouldn't have any. It has a short half-life of less than 3 million years. There shouldn't be any Neptunium-237 left on the moon. There is, but not on Earth. Made of the same material, why that difference? There's a lot of helium-3 on the moon. It would be great for fusion reactors. It's the perfect fuel for a fusion reactor. There's a lot of it on the moon. This would be a great source of fuel for us. Hardly any on Earth. The Maria, these big, vast plains, the dark plains that are supposed to be lava flows, they're all on the side facing the Earth. They're not on the side facing away from the Earth. The density of the moon on the Earth side is slightly less than the density of the moon on the other side of it. I can go on. There's just all sorts of things here. We can't find any evidence of isotopes for the planet Theia, just from the moon, from the Earth. So what's happening here? Well, why are we getting all these oddities, these extra eccentricities? For instance, there's transient lunar phenomena. These have been going on for millennia, but NASA commissioned a report for the last 500 or 600 years after the telescope was invented to get an idea of what was going on the moon. There have been flashes, so-called volcanoes, although the moon's supposed to have no volcanoes and not for billions of years. There are streaks, there are tracks, there are beacons, there are fogs, there are mists, there are strange blue lights. There are so many of these near one crater that they call the Aristarchus crater. Astronomers now, not me, actually call it the blue gem because blue glows have been sighted there so often. And we come up with various theories as to how this could be, but none of the theories really hold water or have been tested.
That is super interesting. Now, is this one of those cases where, and this is what I guess I'm trying to figure out with moon literature in general, where people have just been screaming this into the void. They're going, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong about it. And the NASA or whoever it is, I don't really know if there's a scientific authority besides, I don't know, like I'd be curious. Okay, let me ask you this. Say you sit down with Neil deGrasse Tyson and you bring all this stuff up. What do you think he says?
First of all, I think he's a fairly educated man. He's very good at what he does. I don't think he's the best scientist in the world. He is like Carl Sagan was. He is a television personality. So is Michio Kaku. They
Yes.
they are scientists in their own right. They've earned their degrees. I'm not saying they haven't, but they have decided that the media circuit is the way to go. And I think he's being reasonably conservative about what he says is going on. But I also think, I hate to use this term, but I think he's a bit of a shill for the mainstream scientific community. Carl Sagan said that the extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Yeah, that's a great line. But then who decides what's an extraordinary claim in the first place? Who decides what's extraordinary evidence? Alfred Wegener was a noted geologist back in the turn of the last century, early 1920s. He came up with a really strange idea that people just laughed at, and it ruined his career. He died in ignominy. And his idea was continental drift. They completely laughed him out of the arena. And then by the 1950s, suddenly it was accepted and it was considered a part of geology, continental drift. But the idea that continents floated around on the surface of our planet laughed him out of the arena. I mean, so this happens all the time. The mainstream protects the mainstream. They say they're open to the scientific method, but they get to choose what's an extraordinary claim and what amounts to extraordinary evidence. Apparently, even the federal government declaring that UAPs or UFOs are real isn't enough for them.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
I mean,
the government has actually come out and said, yeah, they exist. We don't know where they're from or who's doing it, but these things exist. We've got video. They've shared it with the public. They don't deny that they have a special task force investigating it. And yet the scientific community goes, well, maybe UFOs should be investigated. Maybe. It's a major social phenomenon. Even if they're not real, the fact that they're impinging on human society to the extent that they are, if they're not real, should be of a major interest to every psychologist and sociologist on the planet.
Yes.
But they ignore it. It's like the third rail. Don't touch UFOs. It's
that
changed
is interesting.
A little just recently. Yeah. But not. It's still not where it should be.
Yeah, that is super interesting. I mean, have you ever, look, I know, I mean, you've got a book like Ancient Alien Agenda in there. I don't know if you delve into that, but have you been able at all to trace where you think, I mean, look, I'm curious your thoughts on this, I suppose. There's a lot of different schools here. There's a lot of different pieces of the puzzle. One of the biggest ones that I'm trying to figure out often is it seems like there are two agendas that seem to I hear come up over and over again from guests. One is the, and I think they're related, but if we're to break it down, really reductionist, one is, hey, some body of people in power do not want humans to be able to access their inner resources. Their ability to travel with their minds, to do great things, to achieve great things, to achieve some kind of, I don't know, I mean, there are better words for it, but enlightenment, awakening, some sort of internal, the ability to manifest, that kind of thing. There seems to be a lot of, I hear that a lot. Oh, they don't want to teach you that. They want to make you the slaves. They want you to work for them. They want you. So there's that piece, which is kind of this like mind prison idea. Then there's the other side, which is like, and I'm truly trying to just figure out what is going on with this, which is, yeah, no. Presidents, they ask about the UFO thing. They always say they're going to investigate Area 51, and then all of a sudden they never get close. They can't do anything. It gets shut down. Something always happens. There's some faction, the Men in Black, something at the top that is saying, can't go near that, can't go near that. And some people pose that it's because they themselves are these extraterrestrials, and they're saying, oh no, we can't let humans know. And some say maybe when they have like a conversation, you know, the Galactic Federation is in conversations with the elites, and maybe they're half lizard and there are just a lot of contradicting theories, and there are a lot of interesting theories. In your opinion, how far have you gotten with this? Have you made your way to figure out what is going on with the alien, the broader alien agenda, and who's suppressing this?
Well, on the one hand, I have been trying to do that since about 2010. And I've made some headway and some not so much. I mean, some of the questions you ask are still the ones we're all asking. I will say this. Here's what I've come up with all the investigation I've been doing and all the resources I've been able to obtain. Something is going on, most definitely. This something seems to be either extraterrestrial, interdimensional, or perhaps something to do with time travel. But these objects that we see in the sky are real. Even the federal government now admits that in many cases they do seem to be real. And their only concern, oddly enough, is whether they constitute an aerial hazard to airplanes and such. You would think they would be much more concerned than that, wouldn't you, if someone's violating our airspace all over the place?
Yes.
Secondly, whatever this phenomenon is, it has been around a long time, quite possibly for the entire history of the human race. Thirdly, there is something strange about all of this. If they are just experimenting, if they are just trying to learn about us, why the countless abductions? Over 1.5 million Americans claim to have been abducted. If that's just a social abnormality, if it's not real and they just believe this, even so, again, this is an incredible number of people who have a delusion, and it's the same delusion. So aren't we supposed to be checking into that scientific method? And finally, I'm not sure the aliens have our best interests at heart. If they exist, if they're from the future, if they're from another dimension, wherever they're from, they have abilities we don't have. They have extensive abilities we don't have when it comes to physics. They apparently have a new form of physics we don't understand yet. They can do things with aircraft that we wouldn't even believe were possible and shouldn't be under the laws as we now know them, the laws of physics. They have this tremendous ability to violate airspace anywhere in the world. They can go at incredibly fast speeds. They can apparently come in and out of our reality with their ships apparently blinking on and off. Apparently, they also have some type of cloaking devices that they can use. And they like to hide out in clouds, and they supposedly can create clouds. Now, some of this is less evidence for, but some of it is very strong evidence for. I'm talking about evidence from commercial pilots, military pilots, people who have had thousands of hours of experience observing, and these people have no reason to lie or jeopardize their careers. So this stuff is real. Have people died in these UFO experiences? Yes. Have people been injured? Absolutely. Has property been damaged over and over again? Whoever these things are, whatever they are, they don't seem to abide by our sense of ethics or what we consider to be humane treatment of people. And they just do what they want to do when they want to do it and basically damn the consequences. So whoever they are, I don't think they're our space brothers. I'm not sure what their agenda is, but whatever it is, it either is amoral or immoral, is my opinion. For instance, have you ever heard of any UFO guiding some children who are lost in a woods or saving some people by teleporting them out of a burning attic or house? No.
Right.
I mean, ever.
Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, I have heard a few healing stories, individual healing stories of I can't tell. I mean, if it's an indirect effect or you know, maybe it was just a one off story. I mean, someone once told me that she her face was damaged, and again, you know, I don't know if this is fully true, but there was some kind of accident, face ruin, da 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 da. Went into a craft and then came back and was restored. I mean, have you ever heard anything like that before?
Yes, I've heard with someone who supposedly they had cancer and they were cured. I checked into these cases. There are literally a handful of them.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking less than two hands versus tens of thousands, and I'm not exaggerating here, of people who have been injured, damaged, property damaged, or even died in these accidents. I mean, we've had a weird history of this, forever, it seems like, where people have been harmed in one way or another by these things. And again, whether they're doing it on purpose or just don't care, like you're standing behind a car and it suddenly takes off and shoots exhaust at you, which is what happened with one man when a UFO took off and he was irradiated on his chest. This was up in Canada. And he went to the hospital. It's all well-documented, photos of his burns and everything. And still, scientists don't want to believe it. And yet we'll believe someone who gets on a radio show and says, I had this feeling, or I was telepathically communicated to by an alien. there was, I don't know if there still is, sitting on the board of directors for MUFON. I believe it's the board of directors. Don't quote me on that, but it's the high inner circle. It's a woman. She's a UFO researcher who says she trans channels some ancient alien who's been dead like for 60,000 years or something. I don't know the details, but I used to be a MUFON investigator. I left MUFON basically for that reason. And so did my state director of North Carolina. She also left it for the same exact reason. We no longer had faith in our ruling council, so to speak, or our board of directors, whatever you want to call it. So,
Yeah.
no. But
Oh,
I
go
want
ahead. Go
facts.
ahead.
Well, I just want evidence. People can get on there and say, I feel this, or I was mentally contacted. Prove it. To be a scientific method, it has to be a repeatable experiment. Prove it. Show me. Show me the money. That's all I want. And if you can't show it to me, then I won't say you're lying, but I won't say that. And you may be telling the truth as you perceive it, but it may not be the truth. So you got to be a little careful there with that. It's hearsay, inadmissible in court.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. Well, look, given that you have this bent towards evidence and whatnot, I mean, let's go back to the moon. I'm curious about some of the other anomalies there. I mean, I'm thinking about you, I'm sure you've seen that video that has been circling around of the crafts entering what looks to be like a small hole, almost like the Death Star. I mean, people say it's the Death Star. Do you buy any of that evidence, the craft flying around, stuff like that, that's been dropped on the public?
Well, yes, I do, because NASA commissioned that report on transient lunar phenomena, and it clearly mentions that there have been beacons seen on the moon, flashes of light repeating, volcanoes. There are no active volcanoes on the moon, but they've been observed for as long as 3 to 4 months at a time in the past. There have been mists, glows, fogs. This is a dead world with no atmosphere to speak of at all. Where is all this stuff coming from, and why is the Aristarchus crater glowing blue so often? And why is it that when they did a spectroscopic analysis of that blue glow, it matched that of a fusion reactor? Isn't that strange? And then you
Yeah.
have to look at the craters on the moon. The small craters are quite deep. The large craters are quite shallow and flat. And the reason for this is two Soviet scientists in the 70s came up with the spaceship moon theory. And they were members of the Soviet Academy. These are not some kind of nuts. These are reputable scientists we're talking about. And their idea was that there was an inner metal shell on the moon about 20 to 25 miles down. And below that is hollow. They based this on the idea that whenever you do seismic tests on the moon, the seismic waves don't go through the center of the moon. And as one scientist in America put it, it's as if there's nothing there to carry the waves through it. Now,
Huh.
this would also explain the craters. If a meteor impacts the moon and it's a small one, it doesn't make it 25 miles down into the moon. So it leaves, however far it goes, it leaves that kind of a deep crater. However, the big shallow craters are hit by something massive. It penetrates the moon, it goes down and hits that metal shell and rebounds. And that rebounding magma is what you see that's made all the big craters so shallow versus the small craters, which aren't. They base it on a lot of things like this, also Neptunium 237, Helium 3. They base it on the fact that the moon has Maria, those large plains of dark lava flow on the Earth side, but not on the far side. The far side of the moon looks completely different than the near side. And by the way, there is no dark side of the moon. There's only the far side and the near side. Both sides get light.
Right. Oh man. And I mean, I know that there's, well, I'm curious what your take is, of course, on, what actually went down with the landing of the moon. I mean, did they actually go to that moon, you think, or is it something else?
Oh no, they went to the moon. I mean, I was alive at the time. I was just a young kid, but I remember staying up all night to watch. It was a big deal. And one thing they found out is when they dropped something onto the moon, like the landing module back after they were done with it, the moon rang like a bell, sometimes for hours, as if it were hollow. Now, everything rings a little bit, vibrates, in other words. If you struck the Earth with a hammer, it would vibrate too. When we have an earthquake, it vibrates around the whole planet several times over. But whatever strikes the moon, no matter how small, it seems to create a vibration akin to a bell ringing that can go on for quite a long time. And the only way this could be is if the moon is hollow. So they keep coming up with this stuff. And is any of the smoking gun? No, but if you add it all together, it's pretty impressive. And yes, I think the moon may be occupied. My book, Deadly UFOs and the Disappeared, and For the Moon is Hollow, Aliens Rule the Sky, is based on the premise that there are aliens on the moon, or were, and probably still are. And the reason they're there is it's the high ground. Any military expert will tell you, any military always wants the high ground. It's the best defensible position and the way to observe everything at once. And the moon is certainly Earth's high ground.
Yeah, that is very fascinating. I mean, look, I'm curious if you've if that even means, you know, like maybe you can shatter some myths here around. I mean, what's the whole thing that, you know, they get to the moon? It was a Neil Armstrong that saw something and then they cut that out. They saw footage and then they delayed it. I mean, did any of that stuff happen? Do you think they encountered any structures or things that got censored or their
Oh, I
photos
think
that
they
NASA
do.
wiped?
Absolutely. There was a case of some kind of a stone bridge on the moon that was observed by two different astronomers back in the mid 1900s, well, 1950 or so. And then the bridge disappeared and no one else could find it. But they both claimed to have seen it. They were both separate astronomers, were not related to each other in any way or friends or anything, in different places on the Earth. And they both saw this stone bridge. It's gone now. There was what looked like a square fort at one point on the moon. And oddly enough, NASA chose to launch an expended satellite right at it to see if it would raise a plume of water in that area. Oddly enough, it was also right over the remains of what looked like a ruined fort, an old, old ruined fort. Not there anymore, not now. So, and there's ideas, people have seen what they call Los Angeles. It looks like city blocks. There's domes that people have set around the moon. Stuff on the far side that looks like mines, and it's been airbrushed out. People in NASA have said that they actually were there when it was being airbrushed out for public consumption. On the NASA site, the high resolution photos that show these things have been replaced by low resolution photos. You can't get the high resolution photos anymore. And as far as aliens go, I was watching a live feed from the space shuttle one time. It had a female commander, I can't think of her name, but she's standing there floating in the cabinet talking live, and you're hearing her talk and seeing her floating. And she says, oh, there's that alien spaceship again. Then suddenly nothing, sound cut out completely. Video is still there. You're still watching on the television, no sound. And you can see she's still talking, still at the window, but you can't hear what she's saying. They switched her to a private channel.
Oh, what are they doing? What this is, I mean, clearly I wonder about people. Does everybody that works at NASA have to sign an NDA? Or, I mean, they probably do what they claim they're doing with the secret black ops UFO retrieval programs. It's they compartmentalize things. I'm sure NASA is very compartmentalized, different segments. But I mean, at the same time, you do have these people that come forward supposedly years later and say, I was there, I was involved, I know that they covered this up, I have the original photos. I, you know, I mean, have you ever talked to any of these people that were on the ground in NASA around the time that can vouch for some of these things that we've been talking about?
Well, I've talked to quite a few people involved, and I talked to Sergeant Carl Wolf, was it? I also talked to one astronaut. It was in an open session where he did answer questions. I want to say Frank Borman. I have talked with Nick Pope. I have talked with quite, I've even talked with oh, the guy from Fire in the Sky, the movie, what was his name? Travis Walters. I've talked with him. So I've made it a point to try to talk to people for real. I've made it a point to try to gather evidence. And the upshot of my evidence at this point right now is that UFOs are real. They exist and they've been around a long time. And what their purpose here, I don't know, but it does not seem to be a good purpose. Now, maybe there's good aliens and bad aliens. It's the space brother type and the bad type. I don't know. There is some evidence to suppose that could be true, but do they have our best intentions at heart? I don't think so. Some people say there are space brothers. They can't interfere. That's why they don't say people in a burning house or Hansel and Gretel from the woods. But If they don't interfere, but they allow the bad aliens to interfere, then isn't that the same thing? If you don't interfere, but you're allowing everyone else to interfere with this human race, isn't that just as bad as if you did interfere with them too? I'm sorry, but there's no neutrality in a war. I mean, you're either involved or you're either with us or you're against us, kind of a thing. If you're being the space brothers, just standing back and letting us evolve, but other aliens are busy messing our lives up every day in every way they can, how is that being space brothers? If you're my space brother, aren't you going to help me?
That's interesting. And yeah, I mean, it's well, it, of course, it makes me think of people that might also be shills. I mean, I always, you know, it's funny. I feel like I've never, well, maybe I've had a few people on this show, but whenever I bring up like Stephen Greer, people go, I don't know about that guy.
Well, I'm afraid I have to do the same thing. He was a man I thought was really interested in doing good work. And for me personally, and it's my personal opinion now, not your show's, I think he's gone off the rails. I really do. And a lot of them do that. They're so anxious to get the answer that they begin to perceive things that can't be validated by anybody else, that he can contact them mentally, but we can't, and that he can summon them, but we can't. Well, that's not a repeatable scientific method sort of experiment, so I have to discount it. Is it true? I honestly don't know, but I have to err, again, having been a MUFON investigator. If there's any doubt at all, even if it seems like it might have been a real event, but if there's any conflicting evidence, I have to say no. There was a case where a woman said she saw a UFO over near Raleigh. I went over to investigate. First thing I found was there's a private airfield right near where she said she saw this. The day she saw it was very cloudy and misty. And also, the International Raleigh Airport was right in that same area. Now, she said she saw a silver spear that lasted for about 9 seconds through the clouds. And then it disappeared. And then later, when she recounted the story to me in person, it suddenly became 30 or 40 seconds. And she drove me to exactly where she saw it. Well, where she pointed was right towards the airfield. It was a very cloudy and foggy day. And if you'd seen the nose of a jet just appearing through the clouds for a moment as it turned to head north or wherever, she could have misconstrued that as a sphere. Did she think she saw a UFO? Yeah, I'm absolutely sure. She wasn't lying as far as she was concerned. Could I list it as a UFO sighting? No, I could not, because of that private airfield and because of the international airfield and because of the weather conditions of the day. So, did she see a UFO? I think she probably did. Could I count it? No, I couldn't.
Yeah.
You have to be careful, you know? You have to be careful.
Well, you make some very good points. I mean, one of the things that is, I've never really thought about until today was that Greer goes on and on about, oh, there are, you know, they're benevolent and they haven't shot down and fired weapons. And whenever there's nuclear, you know, explosions or nuclear power plants, you see these crafts flying around. But it still doesn't excuse the abduction behavior. It doesn't, what you were saying, the traumatic experiences that people have. You know, he never comes out and says, oh, and this is all for a benevolent purpose. I mean, you just don't really hear. I mean, he doesn't really talk about abductions that much.
Well,
But
I wonder why kidnappers in court can't get off of that same plea. It was meant to be a benevolent abduction. I've heard that has never worked as a defense in court, and it doesn't work with me. If you're violating my human rights by kidnapping me against my will, by abducting me and submitting me to traumatic experiments which are quite painful, apparently, but which they then make you not remember. But just because I don't remember it doesn't mean it didn't happen and that it didn't hurt and it wasn't a violation of my rights as a human being. Now, whenever people start saying it's for the greater good, beware, be careful. Usually that greater good is what they want. It's their goal, not necessarily yours. So who's greater good? That's the next question you should ask.
yeah, no, I mean, I can't, you know, I mean, you would figure there'd be one person who's had a traumatic event with a craft or an alien that would say, hey, this was no, but I believe that these are our brothers and sisters. I mean, it just doesn't, yeah, I don't know. I no, that said, I mean, I do think that they're are people that have stories of going to crafts and then they go off and become star seeds. I mean, I don't even know what that's about, but yeah, I think you're right.
I think it's mostly wishful thinking, to be honest with you. Back in the 50s and 60s, they had what they called contactees. These are people who claim that aliens came and talked to them and were space brothers and took them to Saturn to see their civilization on Saturn and on Venus. Well, we've been really close to Saturn and we've landed on Venus. It's a hellhole. Ain't nobody living there, let me tell you. So even though they met well and they probably believed what they were saying, I think they were just deluded individuals. And again, it's just not evidence. I could tell you anything I wanted to tell you. I'm a time traveler. I'm from the year 2630. I know what's going to happen tomorrow. Well, unless it actually happens tomorrow, don't buy it. Like John Teeter is all over the internet in the 90s and early 2000s.
Oh, yes.
And it turned out he was just a big hoax, which I thought right from the start, because a lot of his predictions, most of them, the vast majority, weren't panning out. And he says, oh, that's because I came back in time and I changed events, and so the future is not going to be the same. How interesting, and what a convenient excuse. I'm sorry, don't buy it.
Well, there's that. Then there's even, you know, I mean, I wonder about, well, Al Bialik and going to the future and the predictions. And stuff around you know, Montauk and Philadelphia experiment. I mean, is what is the evidence turned up for that?
Well, the evidence for the Philadelphia experiment is almost non-existent. It boils down to just one man who wrote about it well after it happened, and he can't verify anything. In fact, the evidence is against it because they have verified the ship's records of where it was at certain times at certain locations, and also by independent witnesses, and it just wasn't in Philadelphia at any point. It, I mean, it was supposed to have bounced from one place to another. It didn't, apparently. Now, was the Navy experimenting with something? Quite probably. Did it actually result in time travel? Don't see enough evidence to support it. If I had even two people who independently corroborated the story, I would be inclined to believe it, but I can't. I can only find the one.
Interesting. What about underground military bases? Anything there?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they exist all over the world. I mean, let's be honest. We know for a fact that NORAD exists up in the Cheyenne, Wyoming. And it's inside of a mountain. So, yeah, we know underground bases exist. And do they have aliens in them? Well, it'd be an ideal place to interact with them where the public couldn't see them, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
Senator Inouye said that there is a hidden government with a hidden agenda, which has its own military and Air Force and Navy. Now, this was Senator Inouye of Hawaii, a long-respected, long-term member of the U.S. Senate. And he came out and said this decades ago before he died. So if you want to believe in Majestic 12 and a hidden group that's involved with the aliens or the Dulce secret base where you interacted with aliens and there was a rebellion or something, well, there is some grounds for it if even a U.S. senator will say this. And he was no fool. I go by the person's character and their background and their history. And if I find that their history is not one that's on the fringe or really out there, like mine is, then I'm more inclined to believe them than if it is. So, and he's not the only one. There have been several people that have said this, including Reagan, when you mentioned the fact that if we were attacked by aliens, the world would come together. And is this not, in fact, the case? I'm paraphrasing a little, but that's basically what he said at a UN meeting.
Yes.
Jimmy Carter said he saw a UFO when he was governor of Georgia, and he was going to investigate it when he became president. Never did. That was the end of that. Somehow, when they become president, and then also Reagan was watching a movie one time, I think it was E.T., in the White House with some friends, and he said, or maybe it was Nixon, and he said, I think it was Reagan, and he said something to the effect, there's only several people, only like two people who know the truth about all this. That's an odd thing to say. Then there was Jackie Gleason, the famous comedian and actor.
Right.
He was friends with Nixon. He claims that he saw dead aliens that Nixon showed him to him. I guess it was at Area 51 or somewhere. I can't remember where. There's so much information on this stuff. But he claims he saw it, and he never backed off of it, but he refused to discuss it after that. Never brought it up again, and he wouldn't answer questions about it. But he never denied it.
Whoa, that is interesting. I mean, then we even have this, Israeli space security chief, Chaim Ashad, talks about a galactic federation. I mean, do you think that's something?
Well, it could be. He could be describing something and using Star Trek terminology to try to describe it. It could be. We could be in a zoo and we're just carefully kept at a distance and observed. We could be an experiment. It could be our space brothers, some of them trying to help us. We could be part of a fringe of a galactic empire. This dates way back. I mean, the Vedic texts of ancient India, the Sumerian texts talk about alien races. The Vedic texts talk about over 400 different alien species, and that there was a great war in space. It took war in place mostly in space, but on Earth and on the moon. It talks about one of the gods. I'm trying to think if it was Kali or Shiva, and I don't remember offhand, having flown to the moon in one of his vimanas. That's a flying machine that they discuss in detail in the Vedic texts, and had a battle on the moon. So, yeah, I think something was going on, and I think it's been going on a long time. And I don't think whoever these people are, or whatever they are, I'm not sure what their agenda is, but I'm not sure it's what we would want as an agenda. In fact, I'm almost sure it is not.
Whoa. Okay. That's interesting. So when you see these craft flying around nuclear power plants, you think they're not trying to protect us?
No, I think they're curious. Apparently, there was one when the first bomb was tested at White Sands, New Mexico. I think it attracts their attention. Gamma ray bursts will do that. And atomic bombs give off strong gamma ray bursts. We can detect them from other galaxies. And for a long time, we thought people were detonating atomic bombs somewhere on Earth. We couldn't figure out where. And it turned out they weren't on Earth. They were gamma ray bursts from exploding stars, that sort of thing. But yeah, we would know that. And I think when it comes to nuclear, they're interested. And there was one case where they apparently even shot a ray at a missile that was being launched and made it go off target. And not that it was nuclear, it wasn't armed or anything. But this was at the very same time. And they actually have a film of that. There's actually a video of it. I don't know if you can get it on the internet, but I would try. Of this rocket being launched at some military base in the West. And it had nuclear weapons on the base. And not only did the nuclear codes suddenly activate, but also this missile looked like it was hit with some kind of ray and then it went off course. So, yeah, they're interested, but I don't think they're trying to save us.
Yeah, I mean that is kind of a again it is kind of a bit of a it's a logical jump, to just say that to say, oh, that's why they're flying around these sites. I
Well,
mean
it's
that
a
is
possibility, but you have to, I mean, there's lots of possibilities, but is it a
exactly.
probability? That's the thing. Is it a probability? Lots of things are possible, but are they, for practical reasons, probable? If you found a gold watch in the desert that worked perfectly, and I pointed a gun at you and said, did someone lose this watch in the desert? Did someone make this watch, or did it just accidentally come together on its own? Which is theoretically possible, given enough time. In the right conditions, a gold watch could spontaneously occur in nature. The chances are very small, but they are there. So if I pointed that gun at your head and asked you, which was it? Did someone leave it or did it spontaneously occur? What would your answer be? Now remember, you want to live.
Right. I mean, somebody lost it. That would make.
Exactly my point. So is it possible that it came about by natural means? Yes. Is it probable? No. And would I bet my life on that? No.
Yeah. Interesting stuff, Rob. So what about this moon that may have not appeared before in history? I mean, where is the recorded historical evidence for a moon not even always having been there?
Oh, we have lots of evidence for it. It's not the kind of evidence we would like to have because it dates way back, but there are stories in almost every culture around the earth about the time before there was a moon. Aristotle and some of the Greek, it might have been Aristarchus, talked about a time Greece was inhabited by the Proselenes and not the modern Greeks of his era. Proseline means before there was a moon. These are people who lived in Greece before there was a moon. Romans talk about a time before there was a moon. In Central and South America, a lot of native tribes start their stories about their legends, which to them aren't legends, but history, verbal history, with in the time before there was a moon. Now, they don't stay in a time before there was a Mars or Venus, which are clearly visible every night in the sky, or a Jupiter, or even the sun. They talk about before there was a moon. Plus, there is also evidence that, besides the stories and that sort of thing, that the moon might not have existed. People say, well, it has to have always been here. There's tides. The sun creates tides too. We have solar tides and we have lunar tides. So, and also, if you look back at pictographs in cave paintings, that sort of thing, we don't have any pictures of the moon prior to about 500 years ago. No, we can clearly see the moon in the sky. You and I can both do it. We could draw pictures of it with the what look like mountains or the Maria, the Maris, but we don't. The craters certainly are evident. The dark light spots are certainly evident. We didn't do it. In fact, the earliest painting we think of the moon is a caveman painting. It's just a crescent with some stars painted on a wall in Spain, I believe, it is southern France. And that's it. We should have the moon is a major object in our night sky, comparable to the sun in many ways, in its size and in its manifestations, and its ability to tell seasons that we could use, like one month, that sort of thing.
Right.
So why is it more prevalent in our history? Images and pictures of the moon. Why is it before there was a moon, but not before there was a Venus? Did you know the Aztecs and the Mayans really worshiped Venus? That was the heavenly body that they really worshiped. Why not the moon? It's a lot bigger and a lot brighter than Venus. Was the moon not there?
That is weird stuff. What is going on with this thing? I mean, what in the world are we doing with this hollow moon? Have you, I mean, I know that you've cited some of the theories and in you in your books, especially in the book, which we will link to a page where you can access all these books. But For the Moon is Hollow and Aliens Ruled the Sky. You go through the five main theories of the moon's origin, what's wrong with them. Oh, wait a minute. I'm gonna ask you about their two hollow moons. That's an interesting idea too. But do we, I mean, is it a spaceship? Is it just where have you landed?
Well, the moon could have been an existing object in orbit around the Earth. I think its orbit was changed at about 12,000 to 50,000 years ago. The moon's orbit is far too circular. It should be elliptical. It's not. There's only one other planet in the solar system that has a more circular orbit than the moon. That's Venus. And by the way, Venus rotates the wrong way around the sun. It's backwards, and we don't know what. And Venus has no moon at all. We can't account for that. Every other planet seems to have a moon, except maybe Mercury. But Venus is a very strange world. But yeah, it's the moon's orbit's too circular. It's at just the right distance to make eclipses perfect, total eclipses. It's the only moon in the entire solar system out of hundreds of moons that does that between the sun and the mother planet. It's the only moon that does that out of hundreds. It's also it's we just can't explain how the moon is in the orbit it's in. If it was captured by the Earth, the Earth had to have had a much more extensive atmosphere to act as a braking force for it. It wouldn't have ended up in its present orbit. It was far more likely to collide or get slung off into outer space, or the Earth was, rather than form this union that they have. So the idea of the Earth catching the moon is not likely because. And then they said, well, because they have the same isotopes, maybe it was formed out of the same mess that the Earth was formed out of. That doesn't work either because the angular momentum of the moon, its orbit, just don't allow for that result. So then we tried the impact theory, and that seems to be the most likely so far. And yet it's got major problems. If the moon formed from the impact of Theia with the Earth way back when, there should be isotopes from Theia on the moon as well as isotopes from the Earth. There doesn't seem to be. The Earth's density should be the same, basically, as the moon. It's not. The Earth is denser than the moon, much denser. So, and that's a real problem. The craters on the moon, like I told you, the small ones are deep, big ones are shallow. It's the reverse of what it should be. Neptunium 237 on the moon shouldn't be there. Helium-3 is on the moon, but not on Earth. If they came from the same place, shouldn't they be the same? They're not. Layers of soil on the moon are in reverse order. The dark side, or the far side of the moon, I should say, is different geographically and geologically from the near side. It's denser, it's thicker crust on the far side of the moon than on our side. Why? I mean, there's a lot of questions. So the moon could have been moved. It could have been terraformed and moved there. The center might be a ship, and they might have buried the ship in the moon. In fact, we just recently found in the last few years a huge source of metal at the south pole of the moon. It's so big that if it were an asteroid, it'd be the size of Hawaii.
Whoa.
Now that's big, and it's underground. So they're wondering how the heck it got there and why didn't it leave a lot more devastation when it impacted the moon. It should literally have shattered the moon. When you throw something the size of a state at the Earth, it's going to do a lot of damage to the Earth. Why not the moon? So yeah, there's. I think that it may have been moved there. If you look at alien races, in the human race, some 5% of us are considered to be truly criminal in nature, just 5%. Seems like there's a lot more criminals out there than that, but that's the going
Yes.
statistic of the real criminal. Well, if you put that with races that are bad versus good in the universe, if just 5% of them are basically evil, the dark forest syndrome, the kind that seek out other races and destroy them, then that would be a heck of a lot of races, theoretically. So it would not be a stretch of the imagination for a civilization in fear for its well-being, but hide itself inside of a moon and launch itself into deep space, set sail on the cosmic sea, as it were. It would be enclosed inside the moon, no radiation leaks, no radio wave leaks, no television, nothing would get out of it. It'd be lost among a countless number of other rogue worlds floating between the stars. And they believe there are more rogue worlds floating between the stars than there are planets circling stars. So what a great way to get lost and never be found. And you can do this for thousands of years, but eventually, sooner or later, you might want to come into a sun and park your ship or moon, whatever you're using, around the sun to basically do supplies or if you see something interesting. Did you know the only other hollow moon in the solar system that there might be is around the other planet that might have supported life? Mars. They think Phobos might be hollow. Its density is way too low, and they can't figure out how that can be. And it's the only other planet in the solar system that might have once held life.
Yeah.
Curious coincidence.
That is interesting. Though, of course, you know, I mean, I don't know how much stake you put into the idea that there still is or was a program, a secret space program where people were serving time on Mars. Do you buy that?
Let's say I have an open mind about it. I don't totally discount it, but I don't find enough evidence to support it. Although it does have two different people that support the idea, one of them being an attorney for sure. So I would like to see more people come forward about that. But right now, I'm kind of 50-50. Could be true, might not be true.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I also know that there's...
I tend towards the not true.
Right. Well, people
you can claim anything. Give me some evidence to back it up.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, there is, I mean, I'm definitely part of it. I was added to a group on Facebook that is a Mars anomaly research project. Someone I interviewed on the show, Lewis Michael Reinhardt, also a time travel explorer, but he's so into the Mars anomaly. And they're just these people that spend hours and hours going through NASA photos of Mars and identifying structures and looking for patterns. And is that a woman over there? What? How do you explain this? I mean, look, I don't know, but it feels similar to what people have done with the moon footage.
Well, of course it is. And of course we're interested in the moon, and you're going to get people who are going to do that. And I'm glad they're doing it. They might just come across something. They're scanning it like our own scientists probably aren't scanning it. These people are obsessed, and I'm glad they are. I think it's a magnificent obsession. The more data we can collect, and from whatever the source, as long as it's reliable, That adds to the sum total of human knowledge, and maybe it'll get us some answers. That's what I'm in this for, answers. I want to know. I'm not like my brother. Even if the news is bad, I want to know.
Yes, yes. Well, I'm glad you're out there doing this work. Let me ask you something before we go. Japanese lunar lander. And also, didn't Israel attempt to send another one in India? Where do they, why are there always strange things when other countries send lunar landers? They just disappear all of a sudden. I mean, what is the answer on that?
Well, a scientist would say it's because they're very new at it and they're making mistakes just as we did, and they're going to have accidents. The planet we have the most problem with losing rockets and spaceships for is Mars. We have a much greater failure rate. All of us, every country that sends stuff to Mars, has a much greater failure rate with Mars than we do with the moon or even Venus, oddly enough. But yeah, it's definitely a problem. But also, their stuff doesn't last long when it's on the moon. So it does make you kind of wonder. I mean, the Indian spacecraft ceased to function. The Chinese spacecraft rover ceased to function rather quickly, rather quickly. And I don't mean days or months later, I mean hours. So is it just faulty workmanship of a new country trying something new, or is there something going on?
It's a good question. And I remember, I think in August, there was some announcement that NASA wanted to return to the moon. Next year, 2024, they picked out a crew. I mean, are you any
Artemis
high hopes
rocket.
There?
Yeah, I'll believe not. It when I see it. I was there for the original moon launches and the landings, and it's been a half a century. Why haven't we put a man back on the moon? Our technology hasn't gotten worse. It's gotten far better. The average pocket calculator today equals the computing power of the Apollo 11 rocket that went to the moon. They used something that wasn't as powerful as a handheld calculator, let alone a phone. But and our materials have improved. Our launching capabilities have improved. Why haven't we been back to the moon already? Why the long delay? The thing's only 250,000 miles away. That's
yeah, how do you
nothing.
Explain that whole Van Allen belt excuse?
What about the Van Allen belt?
Isn't that the whole reason they? I mean, isn't there some excuse they couldn't go back?
The Van Allen belt's around the Earth, not around the Moon, and we launch stuff through that all the time. Every rocket that goes to Saturn or Jupiter or Venus or Mars goes through the Van Allen belt.
This is all yeah. So okay, so we can go back. We can go back. We just haven't. Is that what
I'm
you're
sorry?
saying? We can go back to the moon. We just
we could
haven't.
Go back. I think we've chose not to go back. One, might be the expense. Two, it might be the political will. And three, maybe we were warned not to.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, David Copperfield, I know for sure, is going to make the moon disappear this February. That's his. Have you seen that? That's his latest stunt. Magician David Copperfield is doing that. You know, it is interesting that these people have obsessions or the moon is this thing. I mean, even though you haven't come down on the side that Stanley Kubrick filmed the moon landing, didn't he seem like he was interested in the moon? I mean, what is your take on that?
Well, of course, we're interested in the moon. It's our closest neighbor. It's been in the sky all our lives, ever since human beings first developed and dinosaurs. It's always been there, and we've always wondered about it. There's not a human on the planet that hasn't looked up at the moon at some point and wondered, what is it? Why is it there? What's it made of? Green cheese doesn't seem to be the answer. But as far as landing on the moon, oh, we've done it. We did it more than once. The Chinese have done it, even though it didn't last long. The Indians have done it. Israelis are planning to do it. I don't know that they've done it yet. I think they had one failed experiment already. They're going for another. But it's hard to keep up with it. There's so much going on right now. This is really the golden age of this sort of thing and the information flowing in. But we know they landed on the moon. We got the broadcast from the surface of the moon. It wasn't just on TV. Ham radio operators around the planet were picking up the broadcast. And by simple triangulation, you could tell at what point on the surface of the moon it was coming from.
Yeah.
No. And if you don't think Russia and China wouldn't have loved to tell the world that it was fake and that America was pulling a fast one, but they didn't. They even congratulated us, Communist China, which was very communist at the time, and Soviet Union, which was extremely communist and very anti-America at the time. They never once said it was fake. They know better. They knew we landed there.
Yes. Okay. You know what? Hey, look, I trust this opinion here for now, but I will welcome challengers on. Someone wants to take me out of the moon landing. Sure. I'm open to both sides. And by the way, I'm open to definitely having you on again, because we need to talk about the Mandela effect. We need to talk about time travel. We need to talk about, you've got a book. Two books coming out. One is a young adult fiction book, or young fantasy.
I'm sorry?
One is a young adult fiction
fantasy? Oh, it's a fantasy. Yeah, it takes place in Cornwall, England. I travel to England mostly every year and spend about a month each time. And I like writing fiction, especially fantasy, goes so well in England because the country's kind of not real anyway, if you know what I mean. It's a lovely country, and I'd love to live there. But when you're in England, it's just, with all the castles and stuff, it makes you feel like you're in Disney World. I said that to a friend when I was there once. He says, "Well, what do you think of England?" I said, "It's just like Disney World, only better." He said, "How is it better?" I said, "Well, when I touch the wall of this castle, it's real. It's not fake concrete like the one in Disney World is. So the difference is, it's Disney World, but it's a real Disney World, and I love it. So I set my stories there quite often."
That's awesome.
This one is about shadow people.
Yes, and you have a nonfiction book about shadow people coming out as well, which makes me go, oh my gosh, I got to get Rob on to talk about that. I'm curious what evidence and things you have there.
Yeah, actually, there's more evidence than I thought, and also less evidence than I thought. I did find out some interesting things. Did you know that the character, he always wears a hat. He's in these horror movies. Is it like Friday the 13th, part 12 or whatever.
Yeah, Freddy Krueger.
Freddy Krueger. Did you know he comes from the idea of shadow people?
Oh, no, I did not.
Oh, yes. There is the Hat Man, the shadow person, the Hat Man, and he's based on the Hat Man.
Whoa,
the man
this
the hat,
is
yeah.
Very
so
interesting.
There is more evidence for this than we realize, and yet also there's a lack of evidence because so much of it is subjective rather than hard, objective evidence.
Interesting. Let's keep the loop open on that. Everybody needs to check out Rob Shelsky. Check out the YouTube channel. Check out his website, all the books that are out there. Tons of interesting stuff. We will link to that. Yo, this has been a very interesting conversation. Definitely thought-provoking for me. I learned some stuff that some new pieces of the puzzle were put in today. So I appreciate it, Rob. Hey, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you. And if you ever put that puzzle completely together, let me know, will you?
Sounds good. Sounds good. Awesome. Have a good one, my friend.
You too, sir.
Rob Shelsky, awesome guest, packed a lot into an hour. And you know, as I approach my 35th birthday, and think about all the shows I've done here and all the things I've learned, I'm going, you know, 30 years ago, I was still talking about puzzles and putting the pieces together, and also pointing out the window and going, what's that big white circle in the sky? I suppose there's always hope for 36. I want to thank Rodney McGilvery for the theme music, Zero Boy for the pre-theme music, and you for listening. I love you to the day I mature. Hopefully never. Talk soon.